From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 31st day of March 2023. It's USDA Report Day, prospective plantings and grain stocks figures. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and how the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture impacted trade in Chicago with Mike Zuzalo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Gary Schnitke will join us to discuss his penning for the FarmDoc Daily website this week. He talks about interest rates, farm loans, and inflation. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. It's kind of hairy for this afternoon. We'll talk with Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's begin with the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture released earlier today. The prospective plantings report shows that farmers in the United States believe they'll plant 91.996 million acres of corn. That's 104% of the last year's final planted acreage figure. And of soybeans, they expect to plant just about the same number of acres at 87.505 million acres. Some of the breakdown looks like this across the Midwest. In Iowa, they expect to plant 102% of the corn acreage they did last year. Illinois at 102%. Nebraska, that's the number three corn-producing state in the nation, 99% of their last year's corn acreage. In Minnesota, at 104%, the number four producing state in the nation. The follow-up at South Dakota is about the number five producing state, South Dakota, for corn, up 103% at 5.9 million acres. Soybeans in Illinois, where they lead at 10.8 million acres, 100% of their bean acreage last year. Iowa at 100% as well, at 10.1 million acres. Minnesota, 101% of their acreage. North Dakota, 115% of their soybean acreage from last year. And Indiana is the number five soybean producing state at 96%, 5.6 million acres. So soybeans are expected to be sown there in this year. One last note, North Dakota for corn expects to put in 27% more acreage than they did last year, at least on their final number, 3.75 million acres, and that's up from 2.95 million acres in that state in 2022. Now let's take a look at some of the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this day. The nearby contract in the corn finished like this after the USDA numbers were released. They and the soybeans managed to gain. Corn was up 11 cents in the main contract at $6.60.5, July at $6.36 on its settlement price, 8.75 higher in December at $5.66.5, down a half cent. May soybeans at $15.05.5, 31 higher, July at $14.75.5, up 28.5, and November beans at $13.19.75, up 16.25. Bean meal at $4.66, up $6.10. The bean oil at $55.49, $1.12 higher. Wheat futures in the soft red unchanged for the July at $7.04.5. And the hard red finished in the July up 3.75 at $8.61.75. Some of the other markets for the day, live cattle futures finished at $161.12, $1.12 higher. Feeders were at $205.25, up 80 cents, and lean hogs at $91.62.5. up 2.5 cents. Crude oil today at $75.51 a barrel, $1.15 higher. Diesel fuel at $2.61.8 per gallon, up 5.3 cents. And gasoline on the wholesale price at $2.67.8 per gallon. That finished 4.1 cents higher for this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzalo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss this morning's USDA reports and the reaction in Chicago going into the close, because you and I talked just a bit before that. The markets were still well off of their lows for the day, but not very far off the highs, actually. It looked like it was a pretty good day after the USDA numbers. What'd you think of everything?
You know, I felt like the grain stocks were a lot more conclusive than the acres overall, Todd, because the recent strength in that spread, in the corn spread and the bean spread, old crop, new crop, It was really a question mark, and I think many people's minds. And I think those numbers coming out today with the corn stocks at 7.4 billion and beans at 1.69, down towards the low end of the trade guess, if not below them on the averages for both of them, suggested those spreads were justified in being strong. It shows that those weaker exports that we've been talking about a lot really didn't show up in the stocks numbers. And it also confirmed, I think, the Western Corn Belt stocks being very depleted. Nebraska stocks overall down almost 30% from last year, and the Iowa off-farm stocks down 17%. So my big question that I posed to clients and subscribers on my noon update is, do end users now, especially in the Western Corn Belt, move much more aggressively next week? Because I got the sense at the beef house meeting, I got the sense at other conversations I've had with domestic end users and then the global market as well, that most commercials probably have been only hand to mouth here recently, especially since the banking situation opened itself up. So I felt like the acreage number was pretty much what we expected, as far as not very conclusive, a lot of weather ahead. Yeah, USDA came up with more corn acres. We kind of sensed that, given that bean corn ratio crashing after the WASDE report, gave it time for the USDA to, I think, add some corn acres as a result of that. And then throwing on top of the last year's principal crop acres, another 6 million probably did the trick.
So I did ask a similar question of Greg Johnson for the Commodity Week program that is still yet to come up, about both end users, and then he answered about the elevator system, saying that the elevator system would look at these numbers and they would not want to hold on given the spreads for very long, and they were likely to move pretty quickly, though there's still a lot of thoughts about what is on farm and whether producers will do that, and certainly how much time they have left to begin really to actually move both corn and soybeans. What did you hear back from your folks about whether end users they thought would move to cover their needs?
I think that generally speaking, it's going to continue to be split. I think end users west of the Mississippi River are going to really move quickly to get needs covered because this drought's not ending. And we're seeing, for instance, Illinois on-farm stocks up almost 11% from last year. And this is corn. Indiana up almost 15%, whereas Iowa's down 1.3%. Minnesota's up 7%, and Nebraska down almost 25% on-farm. So I think that the end users will continue to try and shuttle it across the central and eastern corn belt into the western corn belt. I think the western corn belt will pick it up to try and incentivize those producers, or I should say end users or commercials like Greg at TGM, to really push that corn out west here because they see the writing on the wall that we're not going to have a wheat crop out here. We're probably not going to have much hay and forage. We've got to get as much corn as possible before the planting window ends.
Does that mean basis has got to do most of the work, or will futures follow along, or will they lead?
No, I think that's a really good point, because I was looking at the DTN cash prices for corn, beans, and wheat versus the futures, and corn is the only one that has a cash price above the futures right now, by a lot compared to the soybeans and by a ton compared to the soft red wheat. So I do think the basis will do most of the work, but I do think futures will also follow along at this point, because I think the trade after the acreage and stocks report today is incentivized to keep a premium until we know this weather pattern for sure.
So it really means that producers all across the Corn Belt will have to pay attention to what their local basis is, despite what might be happening in Chicago, I suppose. How much upside do you think potential there is, not in the basis, but in the futures markets? How much will it be pushed along by this?
Yeah, two big issues there. I mean, if you would have asked me 4 weeks ago about that, given the fact that the wheat had not dropped as much and given the fact that the funds were net long a couple hundred thousand contracts of corn futures and options, and we find ourselves as of last week a net short position for the funds, and the fact that we've seen the wheat break hard, I think a seasonal low in the wheat is really needed at this point. I think it makes a lot of sense at this point. I'm starting to see a new record high now in the hard red wheat minus the soft red, up almost $1.90 premium. My charts go back to 84. I can't find anything higher than that on a weekly close. And so I think if this hard red wheat continues to move, soft red will start to be drug up with it. Corn will be opened up to the upside. So to answer your question, I don't see why we shouldn't be able to get closer to $6 in the futures, $6.25 in the Dees corn futures, if we continue to have these weather issues on the northern tier of the Corn Belt and the southern tier of the Corn Belt.
What did you see in those wheat numbers today from USDA?
Boy, you know, it was really hard to figure out until you saw the cotton acres. And I think most of the gains versus what USDA gave us a month or two ago, we knew soft red wheat acres were up. Hard red wheat acres were what took the jump this time. And it was because cotton acres, Texas down 21%, Oklahoma down 21%, Kansas down 30%. Now, that's big percentages, but they're not huge cotton producers. But be that as it may, that's where most of these acreage increases came in on the winter wheat. And so you look at Kansas and parts of Oklahoma and you're thinking, well, that's even worse for the production potential given the drought. But I think that's where wheat between the stocks and the acres got the short end of the stick on both when it comes to the supply-demand numbers that USDA provided us. So I still think wheat is the leader. It's got to be the one that bottoms the first. And it has to bottom off of the European Union and the EU futures, I should say, in my opinion, first, before we can get our market moving higher.
And one other item in those areas, Kansas, Oklahoma, if a drought persists, the price tag will have to stay pretty darn high for hard red winter wheat to be continue to be grown there and not ripped up and planted, I suppose, back to sorghum in that area.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because K-State did an update on their agronomy about a week ago now, Todd, and they essentially said don't rip anything up because you're not going to get anything new to come up. And I've actually seen pictures where planted winter wheat fields have been cut open with a ripper down like, you know, several sections just to keep the soil erosion from adding up and them losing even more topsoil. So I don't know if we even have an answer at this point, because I think we really are in a historic state at this point, unless you want to count the 30s, because southwest Kansas, northwest Oklahoma, from what I'm hearing from people in that area, they haven't seen this since they've been farming.
Wow, something really wild out in that part of the world, and we'll continue to have issues related to the drought that has not abated there yet and apparently isn't likely to any time soon. What does all of this mean as it relates to new crop corn and soybean?
Today's numbers suggest supplies are still tight. And if you add to that the macro things that you and I have talked about for several months now, it suggests that demand is going to be very picky. But there's going to be, I think, times when the supply wins and we see sharp moves to the upside. Those are the places I think you get hedges in place.
Hey, thank you much.
Thank you, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. If you'd like to see a detailed breakout of the USDA reports today, you can do that right now at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org on the homepage. And you'll also find the numbers in the USDA reports tab. Gary Schnitke now joins us, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. Hi, Gary. Thank you for being with us. You have co-authored an article for the Farm Doc Daily website posted this week on inflation and the impact it has on agricultural operations. Can you tell me some of the history behind inflation and its relationship to agriculture?
Yeah, so inflation has spiked here recently. But overall, we've had really low inflation rates roughly from 2000 on. That came after a period of high inflation rates in the 1980s. Those declined to roughly 2000. And then we saw very low inflation rates from 2010 to 2019. But they began increasing here in recent months and reached some pretty high levels going back to the 1980s. Agriculture operating loans have a bare relationship to interest rates and other market interest rates. And so as we see increases in inflation rates, if they are sustained, we would generally expect to see higher interest rates on agricultural loans.
You explore three different interest rate options. One would be the goal of the Federal Reserve, which is a 2% rate. One would be, I believe, what you considered a high rate of inflation, 5%. And the last would be that which we have had in the past of 0%. What are the differences?
So when we look at a 2% inflation rate, what we see is, which is the goal of the Fed, we would expect agricultural loans to be somewhere between 6 and 7.8%. So 6 to 7.8% is roughly where they're at, a little bit higher than they were in the 2010s. And that's based on being less accommodative moving forward, but roughly roughly where they're at right now, but higher than they were in 2018, 2019. We have a 3.5% inflation rate, which would be higher and likely due to wage increases. We would see probably see operating notes in the 7.5 to 9% range. Again, that would be higher than what we've seen them and would require some adjustments to or would increase interest costs and likely would also have an impact on asset prices. Then we looked at a continuing 5.0 inflation rate, which is roughly where we're at right now. And if historical relationships hold, that would generally signal a 9 to 10.6% inflation rate, or interest rate on operating notes.
That would give producers pause, I would think.
Yeah, so we're going to see if in the next several months whether inflation rates actually do come down. I would note that right now we're looking at still low interest rates relative to the inflation rate. And the market seems to be anticipating that those inflation rates do in fact come down. So it's important that they do come down in the next several months.
Thank you much, Gary.
All right.
That's Gary Schnicke, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. If you'd like to read those numbers and projections, you can do so on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribull. A busy day here in the Midwest. Eric, let's begin with the severe weather this afternoon. What are your concerns?
My concerns are that this is a pretty vigorous system over Iowa this later today. We're going to have strong winds around it, multiple chances for storms. And because of the wind shear in the atmosphere, some of these could start to rotate, which means they could produce tornadoes and also large hail. So we, for the first time in a long time, are in the Storm Prediction Center's moderate risk category for most of Illinois. And as a result of that, I just want everyone to be very weather aware today. I'm actually at the Engineering Open House having a blast with a bunch of kids. And I don't think they knew that they were going to get a good lesson in weather today with me. I think they were here to see other things. But, you know, it's one of those days that we just all need to be very weather aware and have access to good weather information, because these storms are going to rip through here pretty quickly, and I'm just afraid of these storms being strong enough to do some damage.
It looks like from about now, the 2 o'clock hour through 7 o'clock tonight is the toughest time for at least our part of the world.
Yeah, and during that same time, there's going to be snow in South Dakota, snow in parts of Iowa, Minnesota, and they have a blizzard warning out for that region. So this is a highly amplified, high-impact system, and it's just the first. We have another one coming into the Pacific Northwest on Sunday. It'll be here by Tuesday. Another big severe weather threat, but listen to this. There are places in the Northern Plains, like coming out of Wyoming into South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, that might pick up more than 20 inches of snow out of the second system after the one we have going through today. So this is a pretty rough go of it these next couple of weeks. And what that's gonna do is just set up more delay for spring planting. It's gonna cause issues in the Northern Plains with more flood risk. So none of that's being minimized yet.
That would be for that northwestern part of the Corn Belt, part of the plains here in the Midwest, east of the Mississippi, Iowa too, I suppose. Farmers will be really starting to get anxious once we get asked after that first week of April. Do you see clearer weather coming?
Not necessarily. I don't see the pattern slowing down too much. It will slow down a little bit. We're not going to see, you know, back to back to back high impact storm systems, but the problem is that with all that cold air to our north, what's going to be allowing the atmosphere to just bring in and leave sustained warmth around to get the soil temps up? I just think we might have to get through the first 2, maybe 3 weeks of April before we start to see the right conditions to get things going. So unfortunately, that's a lot of sitting and waiting on the atmosphere to open up. But remember, I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, in 2018, record cold April, then record warm May. And we do have the ability to flip the switch at any moment and get this crop planted. But there's no early signs that this one's going to be going in fast in the month of April.
And what are your expectations at this point in South America, particularly for that second crop or Safrina corn?
It looks good. I mean, the models had hinted at some drier weather, and now they're bringing back in decent moisture. So they were drier during the vegetative stages of this Safrina crop and now getting moisture as they head toward pollination in the next 4 weeks. And no early indication that the monsoon is going to shut down. So it looks as though most of Brazil is going to have, a pretty sizable Safrina crop. In other words, what they had planned on initially, I don't see any major weather events stepping in the way, making it problematic. Maybe in southern Brazil, but the big states north are going to do what they normally do.
Hey, thank you much, and have fun there at the Engineering Open House.
I'll do that. You have a good weekend, too.
You too. Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org.